5:20, and this is the KDLL Evening News for Thursday, June 4th, on 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna, listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. I'm Ashlyn O'Hara. Thanks for tuning in. Coming up, U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan and Representative Nick Begich keep quiet about their thoughts on two of President Trump's most controversial priorities. But first, Kenai City Council members passed the city's budget Wednesday after making a few last-minute changes. The city spending plan outlines how much money Kenai expects to take in and send out for the 12-month period that starts July 1st. In all, the city expects to take in around $50 million, nearly a third of which will come from taxes. Another roughly $11 million is expected to come from other government in the form of grants, while the city expects to collect more than $9 million in charges for services. The city expects to spend a little over $60 million, more than a third of which will go to city projects. Another $18.5 million will go to salaries and benefits for city employees, and a little over $10 million will fund basic city services. The council also passed a status quo mill rate, or property tax rate, of 4.35 mills. That translates to $435 in annual property taxes for each $100,000 of a property's taxable value. Before passing the city budget, city council members added roughly $250,000 in one-time spending. First, members unanimously approved a roughly $46,000 grant to support the Peninsula Piranha Swim Team in their efforts to keep the pool at Kenai Central High School open. The pool is scheduled to close next month after Kenai Peninsula School Board members folded it into budget cuts earlier this year. Kenai City Manager Terry Eubank says the grant would be used to offset utility costs associated with keeping the pool open, and he says it's contingent on the swim team hashing out a plan with the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District to take over pool operations.
Obviously, distribution of funds wouldn't take place till we had the grant agreement and all those provisions in place, and we still have to work on that. But it sounds like everybody's working in the right direction.
The council also added $70,000 in spending to the Kenai Municipal Airport Fund. A recent city survey found Kenai failed to collect around $136,000 in landing and parking fees at the airport. The city chalks that up to the honor system it currently relies on to collect those fees. The extra money approved by the council will fund a pilot program aimed at boosting billing. Eubank says the new service will rely on aviation data to track airport landings and then generate bills based on those records. A portion of the recouped revenue will go to the company providing the billing service, but Eubank says the program revenue will offset the administrative costs.
Staff over there, I believe, the increase in revenue would be about $130,000 a year. That's our current leakage for this activity that's taking place. It's not being caught. It certainly more than pays for the fee that's being expected here.
The largest budget addendum approved Wednesday is $180,000 for upgrades to the audio and visual equipment in Kenai City Council chambers. Member Bridget Grimmie brought the amendment forward.
Our infrastructure is dated and doesn't offer that accessibility, which if we don't continue to move forward and meet residents where they're at, I think it would raise the question as to whether or not we're really participating in open and accessible government activities.
She says it's too early to know exactly what the remodel would look like, but city staff say they've looked into speaker-detected microphones and individual screens on the city council dais. Kenai's new spending plan takes effect July 1st. That's the beginning of the upcoming fiscal year. The developer of the Alaska LNG project released its first specific public cost estimates Wednesday for the proposed 800-mile gas pipeline and associated infrastructure. The developer, Glenn Farn, told state senators it estimates the full project will cost between $44.5 and $54.5 billion. The first phase of the project, that's the pipeline itself, is likely to cost between $13.2 and $16.9 billion, according to the company's estimates. Glenn Farnolaska head Adam Prestige presented the figures to the Senate Finance Committee Wednesday morning during a special session called by Governor Mike Dunleavy to consider tax cuts for the project.
What we've done here is present the numbers that we think represent actual construction costs for the project.
Cost projections have been a sticking point for skeptical legislators. As recently as Tuesday, Glen Farn refused to release its internal estimates, saying they could compromise negotiations with suppliers and customers. Lawmakers have been skeptical of inflation-adjusted estimates released by the Department of Revenue, pegging the project's cost at around $46 billion. Consultants with the firm Pegasus Global told legislators Tuesday that other large LNG projects routinely ran well over budget, sometimes by many billions of dollars. But Wednesday, after meeting with the co-chairs of the Senate Finance Committee, Prestige said he'd agree to share a range of estimates in an attempt to, quote, thread the needle of appropriate disclosure. Prestige said the estimates were based on engineering studies, bids, economic conditions, and the company's experience developing smaller projects in other regions. Glen Farn has repeatedly sought to reassure Alaskans that the state would not be on the hook for cost overruns, but because the first phase of the project is slated to provide gas primarily for in-state use, legislators have said they're concerned cost overruns could translate to higher gas and electricity bills for homes and businesses on the rail belt. Republican Senator James Kaufman of Anchorage spoke to those concerns Wednesday morning.
People ask, well, why do you even care? It's Glen Farn's problem. There's kind of a yeah, but there. It's true in a way, but then the impact of that is cost to the consumer.
In an attempt to reassure lawmakers, Glen Farn told legislators it supported legal language barring cost overruns from being borne by Alaska ratepayers. Glen Farn also told legislators it had agreed with South Central Gas Utility NSTAR on a maximum price for gas from the Alaska LNG project, $16 per 1,000 cubic feet, indexed to inflation. NSTAR says that's less than the cost of imported gas and in line with new contracts for gas from Cook Inlet. That price, though, is significantly higher than current gas prices, and prices would not drop until major new natural gas customers come online. The special session is set to continue through June 19th. And finally, U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan and Representative Nick Begich are not saying how they feel about two of President Trump's most controversial priorities, a $1 billion security-related request for his ballroom, and a nearly $1.8 billion compensation fund that could pay January 6 riot defendants and other Trump allies. Several news outlets reported Monday that Trump is reconsidering the compensation fund, which has sparked intense backlash. Still, Sullivan and Begich have stayed quiet. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports.
Kodiak retiree Joan Sulesky says she was among a crowd of people who went to Double Shovel's Cider House in Kodiak for what was billed as a 6 p.m. meet and greet with Sullivan and Congressman Begich.
We all had jotted down our little questions to Dan, and, you know, we were waiting. Some people were actually telling us he's never going to show.
This was during the Island Town's Crab Fest. Sulesky says she planned to press Sullivan about Trump's anti-weaponization fund, which she describes as a corrupt money grab. Alaska's other Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski calls it a slush fund. But after about 40 minutes with no members of Congress in sight, Sulesky says she and others gave up.
The overall feeling amongst everybody was, we didn't really think he was going to show, did you?
Since mid-May, Alaska Public Media has sent multiple emails asking for Sullivan's position on the fund and Trump's ballroom. Staff at Sullivan's Senate office and his campaign have not responded, and he did not grant interview requests for this story. Begich's office did not respond last week to an interview request or specific questions either. A Begich campaign spokesman said notice of the meet and greet was circulated before the congressman's travel schedule was finalized. The organizer, Republican Party local district chair Aaron Griffin, confirms that account. Sullivan's office did not say why he missed the Kodiak meet and greet on May 22. The Senate was released for the week the prior afternoon. Leaders of both the House and Senate scuttled votes that were expected to keep lawmakers in Washington longer. Alaskans critical of Trump often say they don't feel they have access to Sullivan or Begich. Begich's main opponents aren't giving him the benefit of the doubt.
Well, I think if you're going to serve Alaskans, you need to be out listening to Alaskans.
That's independent candidate Bill Hill. Another challenger, Democrat Matt Schultz, says he's not buying that there was no way for Begich to get to Kodiak for a 6 p.m. event after voting in Congress the evening prior.
If this was the first time that Nick Begich were completely inaccessible or ducked and covered from an important meeting, I'd think, all right, cut the guy some slack. But this is a pattern. It's an obvious pattern over and over and over again.
Hill and Schultz both appeared at the Kodiak Cider House for their own candidate meet and greets during Crab Fest. Schultz says appearing at the parade the next day, as Sullivan did, isn't an acceptable substitute.
Absolutely. It's not the same as a meet and greet where people have an opportunity to ask you questions or give you corrections. And then you have to stand there and listen and hear it and hopefully respond. If he's just walking down the street throwing candy, that is absolutely not the same.
Both Begich challengers are critical of the compensation fund and say spending taxpayer funds on the ballroom is a bad move. So does Sullivan's Democratic challenger Mary Peltola, who declined an interview request for this story. Sullivan and Begich have Trump's endorsement as they campaign. They rarely criticize the president's initiatives. And Trump doesn't give much wiggle room. He showed in lower 48 elections last month he'll work to defeat Republicans he deems insufficiently loyal. After not meeting nor greeting Sullivan at the Kodiak Cider House, Selesky saw him walk in the Crab Fest parade the next morning.
We yelled out at him, "Where were you last night?" And he turned around, you know, and we said, hey, we waited for you, you know, and he just ran and just turned around and ran.
Selesky says a gap had opened between Sullivan and his support car. He jogged ahead to keep up. Reporting from Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin.
And that'll be all for tonight's KDLL Evening News. We had help from Eric Stone in Juneau and from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C. You can re-listen to this newscast and find our other stories online at kdll.org. I'm Ashlyn O'Hara. Have a terrific evening. Thank you.